Hello, and welcome to Tolerable Risk, the podcast for NGO, nonprofit, and charity professionals who manage risk. I'm your host, Sabrina Siegel. Today, we're going to talk to Edson Marinho. Edson is a project manager and trainer who is passionate about Project DPRO, and he has led PM for NGOs since 2015. Edson has numerous project management certifications and has over 15 years' experience with managing projects and programs, many in the third sector. He has been engaged in developing and promoting project management in the development sector for over a decade and believes that open and fair access to project management tools will empower third sector organizations, particularly community-based organizations, to achieve lasting change and positive impact. Edson, thank you so much for coming on Tolerable Risk today. I'm really excited to have you on the show. Today's episode, we're going to talk about project management, specifically in the third sector and how it supports risk. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for receiving me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get started, for people who aren't familiar with you, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background, and how you got involved in working in the third sector?
Of course. I started my career in the business sector, and I was working for chambers of commerce and institutions that help business to sell their products overseas and sell their services internationally. But around 15 years ago, I had the opportunity to work as a consultant for a nonprofit organization, and the project was focused on preparing small cooperatives like handcrafts and culture to reach international market. Well, I fell in love with working for communities and I never left the sector. In this first experience, I was a team member, not a project manager. And after a couple of years working in this role, I was invited to manage a project. Well, it was a 2.5 million project with 50,000 direct beneficiaries in partnership with another organization in India. First of all, that's not a project. That's a program, not a huge one. And second, I was not prepared for it. So I accept the challenge, but I dedicated the last few months to improve my skills, my techniques, to learn. And that's where I got in contact with the PM DPRO, Project DPRO is the name today, and also with other project management methodologies and best practices. Today, I am the PM for NGOs Active Director. We are an international organization that promotes the professionalism of project and program management in the developing humanitarian sectors. We host and we offer best practices and certifications for project managers, for program managers. We include also specific bodies of knowledge for monitoring, evaluation, BO, and finance management as well.
That's amazing. And you really just got thrown into project management with that massive, like you said, it doesn't even sound like that was a project. That was a program that you got thrown into. How did it turn out? Was it successful?
Oh, it was successful. Yes. And then, like I said, I was thrown out in a project that was not a project. Actually, this is one of the biggest misunderstandings in our sector, the differences between project and program. So any donor, any funding organization, many organizations name any initiative as a project, while not all of them are projects. There might be programs, or there might be even a portfolio for an entire organization. And those different levels of complexity, they require different skills and different techniques and different team members that know better around other techniques implied in project management, like risk management, for example.
Wow, that's so interesting. So you have this background where you have experience in the private sector, like you mentioned, and also now in the third sector. So since we're talking about project management today, and of course, how it relates to risk management, can you talk a little bit about how is project management practiced or implemented differently in the private sector than it is in the third sector?
I would say that there are two main differences, although they are completely different sectors, but two main differences between the corporate and the nonprofit sector when you look at project management. The first one is that projects in the development sector, they have less tangible outcomes, have less tangible results. So when you're managing a project and you think about risks, monitoring, evaluations, outcome, it's more difficult to monitor and see if we are really reaching what you planned at the beginning. The second one is more like a personal people management difference. I'm not saying that all companies have a, let's say, straightforward or tough work between people, but many does. In the development sector, most of the projects are developed and implemented in a participative way. That means that we are always working with several different types of stakeholders, beneficiaries, team members. So it's different when you work on a project management development sector, because you are always working with a reduced, authority on everything that is going to happen, because it's a particular way. And please do not take me wrong. Do not confuse authority with authoritarianism. Authority means that you have authority over processes, not people, but you have to work with them. In a corporate sector, there is more a hierarchy, so you can delegate with more hierarchy. While we work in the development sector, usually, like, it's all, everybody's a team member. There is no boss, let's say.
Yeah, you hear that people really do enjoy working in the third sector because it tends to be more of a collaborative approach as opposed to a command and control approach when it comes to management. However, I also hear that because you have that collaborative approach, sometimes people get sidetracked because they are just trying to make everyone happy. So they're trying to get everybody to agree on something instead of making a decision and saying, okay, I've heard everybody out and this is the direction that we're going. Do you find sometimes that with project management, trying to get a project over the finish line is a little bit more challenging because of that aspect of the third sector?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. That's a really good point. When I'm working with my team, I always bring up that difference between authority over people and authority over process. And yes, of course, you can hear everyone's opinion. You work with them, you learn from them. People have more experience than you have in several different aspects. But in the end, someone has to be responsible for that decision. Or specifically, see, if there is no consensus, someone has to vote, or has to decide, or whoever vote in a different way. And getting stakeholders involved doesn't mean that you have all stakeholders involved in all decisions you make. So this is also a mistake. Sometimes you want to bring everyone to the room to take a decision or to implement an activity. It's not always true.
Those are great points, Edson. And let me ask you another question, particularly about this sort of cultural difference around project management. When we are looking at the culture of the third sector, you know, it's more collaborative. People are really, their heart is in the mission. The purpose of the work that we do is for something other than profit. When we are talking specifically about project management and project management as a skill set, what do you think people get wrong? What do people misunderstand about project management?
Well, let's talk about the project management in specific and nonprofit sector. It's a misunderstanding of the role itself. This is one thing that I always share with my board, and I always share with anyone that I'm learning with. If you think about the project on the corporate sector, let's say to build a airplane, you will see a project manager that's fully dedicated to that project as project manager. You have several people doing the task building, but you have one person that's the project manager. In nonprofit sector, unfortunately, project management is considered like a secondary or supplemental activity. Let me give an example. If you have like a social educational project, you might get the social educator and say, hey, you're going to be managing your project, the person that funds your activity. And that person is a social educator, it's not a project manager. He or she can, of course, look for the skills to become a project manager, but that project should have one project manager dedicated. Or another example is that because it's a role that sometimes is underseen, you have like many, many projects to manage at the same time. Like once in my life, I had to manage 6 to 7 projects at once. And that's because all projects are small, but I believe each project or every small set of projects would require one project manager. So this is one of the biggest misunderstandings in the sector, that the project manager should not have like a dedicated person. And again, this is from my personal experience. I know that many, many organizations more and more are looking at that position as important for the success of the project, and they are putting the resources necessary to have one person taking care of the project.
Interesting. Yeah, I've managed several projects and mostly in the third sector as well. And there seems to be a misunderstanding just simply about the role of the project manager and the depth and breadth of their involvement. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Of course. I remember once I had a discussion, good discussion with one of my trainees when I was running training courses. And the project guide says that the project manager is not responsible for implementing all activities in the project. And the person was the project manager. And he was saying, no, I am responsible for implementing all activities. No, you're not responsible for actually doing that thing. You are responsible for making that thing happen, which is a completely different thing. So it's, of course, you, as a project manager, you want to get involved. You want to go to the community. You want to see what's happening. You want to sit down on the floor with community members and discuss with them. You want to sit down on the floor with children and also learn what they're doing, how the project affecting their lives. But you can do that as a project manager to learn, but not to be directly responsible for every single task and activity in the project. You have a lot in your shoulders. You have a lot of things to do, from planning, monitoring, evaluation, risk management, issues management, managing stakeholders, finance management. So I can continue saying what you have to do, and you have no time to be doing that. That's not your role.
That must be hard for people in the third sector to hear. Since when you work at a charity or a nonprofit, particularly a low to no resourced organization, people tend to wear a lot of hats. You know, you might be the chief finance officer, but you may also be responsible for making sure that the toilets in the office are clean at the end of the night. How do people who maybe have small teams remind themselves or work well with delegation if you're so used to doing so many things in an organization? What are some tips that you have for people on that?
We work in a sector that we have limited resources. And of course, what I'm saying is what would be the ideal scenario for any project or any organization. But we do know that limited resources make people, they have to wear different hats. And I'm so not saying that because you're not allowed to just focus on your project management tasks that you're not going to succeed, but you need to, as much as you can, to avoid that. When I was working in World Vision many, many years ago, I started to manage a project that was just hired to work there. And I asked my director, that, can I go to a different community, one that is supported by World Vision as well, without an agenda? And I want to go there to understand the sector, to understand the community needs, to understand how they work. It gives meaning to my work. Because like you said, if you go to the nonprofit sector, it's because you're looking for meaning for your life. You want to do something meaningful. You want to help. So I did that. I separated what was my project that I was managing from all the activities that I could do as a volunteer internally and helping all the project managers, all the organization managers to do those small tasks, like going to clean the bathroom or help bringing food to the children at the lunchtime.
Yeah, we never have enough hands when we're trying to do projects in the third sector. I think the key here is making sure that the people who are the project managers aren't getting so pulled into the tasks that they forget what their role is to manage the project itself. Can you talk a little bit about PM for NGOs and the training that you offer?
Absolutely. Well, I have to first say that PM for NGOs does not actually offer training courses. We host and we offer best practices for project program financing, our management. So we are not a training organization. We are an organization that develops new best practices and hosts the certifications. We count with several training partners, official training partners around the world to run those training courses. So we have the project management, the PMG Pro. It was the first best practice that it was developed over a decade ago. And it's becoming the standard for the sector. So it's been adopted and adapted for many, many, many organizations. And the best thing around our methodologies is that they are open source. Anyone can download the guide for free, download the guides for free, adapt the guides, distribute the guide, as long as also it's offered for free for other organizations and professions. These best practices have a certification also that is an evidence for project managers, program managers, that they got in contact with those best practices, they apply and use those best practices.
I am proud to say that I am a PM for NGO certified practitioner, and I really did enjoy going through the training sessions. And I downloaded back in the day and printed out and put in a binder all the training materials, and I read them all and studied them all. And I did find that they were really helpful for me not even necessarily just when I was managing projects, but just to kind of organize my thoughts. And even if it was just something that I needed to do myself, some of the approaches, the best practices, like you were saying, Edson, are really helpful just to kind of get you organized individually and make sure that you can set up plans and timelines to achieve whatever it is that you need to achieve as an individual. So I very much enjoyed when I was going through the training, and I was glad to see that the materials are being refreshed, and they're available in how many languages, Edson?
Well, the project deploy is available in 11 languages.
Wow.
Not the guide, not all certifications. The guide is available because we translate the guide. I said, the guide is open source. So we have many organizations that sometimes, for example, contact us and say, hey, listen, we would like to translate the guide to make it more accessible for our team members, for our partners in the community. And we allow them, of course, to translate the guide. The certifications are different. We would need to have a technical experts involved in translating the exam. But we have at PM for NGOs 6 core languages, which are English, of course. We have Arabic, Spanish, Portuguese, French, and Chinese. So we have 6 languages that are our core languages, that we have all our guides and certifications translated to those languages. But we have more languages when it turns out to look at the guides.
That's really helpful. And that's great to hear, especially for people who may be listening to this podcast where English is not their first language. And so it's so great to hear and see that these materials are being made more accessible to folks in the non-English speaking world. So let me ask you this then. Maybe somebody has been trained up, or, you know, you in your own experience working in the third sector. And if somebody says, you know, look, we really feel like we need to implement a little bit more of a formal project management approach, what tends to be embraced with taking this more formalized approach, and what tends to be rejected? Where will people find pushback, and where will people be pleasantly surprised?
So, yeah, if we'd like to make a more, bring a more, let's say, a formalized, formal approach to projects in your organization, the first thing that you need to do is to find support from your board, from your directors. It's really common that project managers, well, let it happen to me. I was thrown into a program that I was not prepared for it. Luckily, I was working in an organization that supported project management. Actually, they took me out of my comfort zone to learn that method. But it's not always the same. It's not always the case. Many, many project managers, they start managing their projects, and they feel that they need to look for skills and techniques. They find it. They might get the project to provide and study it. They might take in a course and get certified. But when they go back to their organizations, they do not find the space for implementing that formal approach. So, of course, you need to find support from your board of directors, from your organizational government. And second, and I think it's really important what you just said about you can use project management skills and tools for anything that you do in your life. Project management should not be only brought to project managers. You have to share that to train team members. You have to train the supporting areas like administrative, finance, IT, human resources. It's really, really important to develop a common language, a common understanding around the techniques, the tools. Everything that you use as a project manager must be in your organization with a common understanding. So that helps a lot to create a structure that is projectized for your initiatives.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And again, it can be something that can be challenging, but getting that senior leadership support is key. It's key for lots of things, but it's key for that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about senior leadership support in a minute. But before we jump to that area, I just want to ask, if people are thinking about risk management and project management, can you talk a little bit about how does project management support risk management? Can you talk a little bit more specifically about that? And then also, can you talk about what are some of the main areas of risk that people may run into when they are using project management or when they're trying to implement project management?
When I think about risk management, I always think about project management. But for me, project management implies risk management. There are a few concepts and areas in project management that is implied that it's not supposed to. We should bring that out more often so people understand the importance of risk management or any other aspect, like I said, one to evaluation in our projects. Risk management in a sector that faces so many different contexts, cultural differences, natural disasters, political issues is really, really crucial for the to increase the chances of success of the project. When you start thinking about an idea that you would like to implement to support the community, the first thinking that comes to you is, what are the risks? What should I be looking at? What should be aware so that project is not actually damaging the community instead of helping? And connecting that with your second part of your question, which is what is the risk that I most see in the sector? Well, the first one is, be careful not doing the wrong project. The most important aspect of development projects is that we identify the right community needs. But this is not what actually happens in our sector. Many, many organizations, they see a funding call and they apply for that call because they think it's a good funding for something that they feel it's a great idea or need in the community. So we need to identify the right needs of that community before even doing anything. And that's where risk comes. There is a concept in some organizations that is do no harm, which means that you're not supposed to do something just because you think that it's going to be helping that community. And unfortunately, not many organizations offer funding for you to collect data and to identify the needs of community. I had a good experience with the Telefonica Foundation. They had a program many years ago called Pro Nino, which was focused on reducing the child labor. And in their funding, they contacted us and they asked if we could work with that methodology, the children educational methodology, in three communities that we support. But we said, well, we need to first identify which communities have that need and which communities and which groups really want to prioritize that type of interventions. We don't do a project, we don't implement a project for them, implement it with them. So it was really great because the relationship with Telefonica Foundation allows us to first receive funding to collect that data, really identifying that there was a present need, an issue. And finally, we select over 10 communities that we worked with, we selected three to work with them.
Definitely that concept of localization and that concept of engaging the participants and beneficiaries in the design of the solutions is so key. And yeah, I think a lot of organizations do miss that. And that is a huge risk because you end up delivering something that nobody needs. And certainly that running after proposals that are put out there just to get more work and more money. And it might not necessarily be something that's within your organization's expertise, that is a reality in this sector. Everybody is elbowing in for a smaller and smaller shrinking pot of resources. And it's going to be tough for the third sector, I think, in the coming years. It doesn't look very good for fundraising and things like that.
And unfortunately, risk management is not actually prioritized, not even by the organizations, but the funding organizations as well. And in that sense, it's difficult to think about collecting data when donors and funding organizations, they always want to invest or to share their resources for the final, for the ending activity, or something that's benefiting directly the beneficiary without looking at first analyzing the need. And looking at risk management specifically, it's really difficult to find resources that are focused on risk management. So usually what we have is we have a budget that you develop, and in the end, what's left over is used for monitoring, evaluation, and risk management. There is a very good example of one funding organization that dedicates funding specifically for risk management. And that's the Inter-American Development Bank, the IADB. Any project that is funded by IADB automatically assigns 10% of their budget or their funds for risk management. If the risk occurs, those funds are used to respond to those risks. And at the end of the project, if those funds are not used, they go to a specific account and wait there for ex post evaluation on all projects that they funded during a certain period, or for projects that they want to replicate or to extend. So they would make an ex post evaluation to move to other communities with that project. But this is an amazing example of a funding organization that dedicates funding specifically for risk management. So I do understand what you're saying, because the majority of funding and implementing organizations cannot allocate resources for need identification and risk management, but there are some good examples out there.
That's fantastic to hear, because the funders that I've worked with, both big multilateral organizations, bilaterals, the philanthropic foundations, they tend to confuse risk management with compliance. And they are two different things. And when they do mention risk management, they are really just doing it at a very high box tick level. And so a lot of times if they ask for a risk management plan, if an organization gives them a risk matrix and they never see anything ever again, they'll accept that and say, okay, risk is being managed, and they move on to something else. And it's quite frustrating for those of us that are saying, wait a minute, you haven't really done anything and the risks are still there, and we may not have as impactful a program as you want because we're not really managing our risk very well. So I hear that. And this is really intriguing about the IADB. And I hadn't heard about that. And thanks for sharing that. I'm going to need to look into that a little bit more, because if they are an organization that can lead by demonstrating that they're doing something about risk in this sector, that's just fantastic to hear. You had mentioned earlier making sure that board members and your leadership are behind you when you're trying to implement project management. So let's say somebody is listening today and they're really interested in implementing more of a structured project management approach. Maybe they've gone to the PM for NGOs website, they've looked at the best practices, and they're saying, yeah, you know what? This will work for my organization. What are a few key points that someone could include in a business case if they were trying to convince management that this is the right way to go?
Well, I would say that the first topic that they would put in a case to bring for their directors and board about having a more formal project management structure in the organization is that, well, first of all, you would be, as much as you can, addressing the community needs, actually making a real difference in the community. And to do that, I would say bring a community representative to talk to the board. When you have a project, bring a community representative to be in the board or in the governance of that specific project, because that person or those people will not only bring the voice and the vote for the governance, but they will also show to the board or show to your organizational directors and share with them what is actually impacting their lives. One Vision Brazil has a very good process. They focus working on children and youth and their families, but their practice is to invite a youth or an adult, if it's the case of projects with children, to have a seat on each project. And that brings the voice of those beneficiaries to the directors. And like I said, it's most important bringing their voice and votes for anything that is going to happen with the project, but also to share with your board. So try to reduce the distance between directors and the community, which is sometimes present. The second thing that I would say about the things that you bring to your board is that once you have a more structured project management processes in your organization, it's going to be easier to demonstrate what kind of impact you are actually making in those communities. So thinking about an organization that is running educational projects with children, I remember one case that I was working on a project that I had an educational project, and an expert entering my room and says, well, it's nice that I can see in your dashboard that you are attending hundreds of children. They have hundreds of activities, but how many children is now going to school and getting better grade? Or how many children is not leaving school because they have to work? So in order to demonstrate those kind of impact, you need a more structured process for monitoring and evaluation. You need to have a project management tools and techniques that are the same using by either your organization or your local partners implementing that organization. So that's also a good convincing reason to talk with your board.
Let me ask very specifically about a specific example of pushback that I've heard before, and I know some of other colleagues I've worked with have heard as well, where maybe you're dealing with an organization and they like to think of themselves as innovative and agile and flexible and responsive and all of that. And you may end up with senior leadership who says, we don't want to put in place a structured project management approach because it will limit our ability to be innovative, or it will limit our ability to be creative, or it will be too bureaucratic. How do you respond to somebody who says that about project management?
I think this is also a misunderstanding about project management. I mean, sometimes you think that project managers bring all the information in a specific guide or a specific technique, and we have to use as it is. And that's not correct. First of all, there is no better or worse methodology or best practice. There is the one that fits better, that better attends your need or the need of your project. This is really important because when you look at our sector, for example, we always think that we need to use Project Pro. But if you look at an organization like Habitat for Humanity, they develop, they build houses, maybe they would need a much more corporate methodology like the PMBO, because it's an engineering project, helping communities, but building houses. So there is no better methodology. Second, you don't have to use the entire guide and follow as it is. You need to adapt to only use pieces of those techniques and tools that will be helpful. And in that sense, Project Pro, because it's an open source guide, you can adapt, change, cut, add as you want. To give you a more concrete example, many, many organizations like Plan International, Save the Children, the Catholic Relief Services, they adapted, not only adopted, but they adapted Project Pro for their needs. Of course, those organizations are even older than PM for insurance. They have a lot of experience and techniques and processes that they are working, and they also want to continue innovating. So they're not taking Project Pro and applying and using as it is. They are first respecting what they already have in place, and they will look what are the gaps and bring tools to fill those gaps. You can adapt the methodology, or you can pick the tools that will fill the gaps without unnecessarily cutting out the innovation of an organization.
That's great. Yeah. I think what people misunderstand about project management is that it's very stiff and it's inflexible. But in reality, project management, a lot like risk management, has to exist in a dynamic environment. And if it is stiff and inflexible, it will not support anybody and it won't be useful at all. So making sure the way that your project management is applied is appropriate for the working environment and the context, definitely key. I agree with that a lot, Edson. I want to go back to board members very specifically. You had talked a little bit about getting the board on board and making sure that the board is supportive of project management. So one of the questions I always ask on tolerable risk has to do with how board members or trustees can demonstrate or voice their support for project management. Obviously, board members can specifically ask organizations, what project management approach are you using? Or show us how you are using project management tools and approaches. That's a very clear and easy way to ask. But in your experience, what are some other ways that board members can really make sure that their organizations that they have the responsible for overseeing are being responsible with projects, are using their resources to the best of their abilities, and are managing risks that are associated with their projects? What are some things that board members can do to demonstrate that support for project management?
Well, in my current position at PM for NGOs, although our projects are not implemented directly with the communities, we have an internal policy that we discussed with the board members, which is each and all initiatives in the organization have an internal sponsor or an internal board member that oversees that initiative. So that creates a space for the board members to see more close what's happening in those projects without necessarily getting directly involved with the activities, although they most of the time they get involved because it's exciting to be part of reviewing a guide or writing a new exam. But that's not the role. The role is to be close to what's happening and overseeing that. By overseeing, I'm not just saying being there to take decisions or to say what's right and wrong, what should be done or not, but also to fight for resources and to fight for that project or that activity to happen. So it's a two-way process. And in one way, the board member is close and seeing what's happening and making sure that the project is going the right direction. In the other hand, he or she is also fighting internally with the limited resources that we have for that specific project to happen. Looking at risks, I think there are a few questions that the board member could ask for the project managers to make sure that they are going the right direction and they are managing their projects with aware of all the risks that are happening. Like you said earlier, sometimes you have like a risk management, risk matrix that is seeming much more like compliance, and you develop that beautiful risk matrix, you present to the donor, you present internally in the organization, and you put in a draw. And at the end of the project, you would look, okay, let's see what happened, and let's use that matrix to justify what didn't happen, which that's not how risk management works. You should monitor the project. You should see what's happening. You should adapt. So a few questions that a board member could ask for project managers and project teams. What are the project assumptions, which is something that we can also talk about because it's a little bit different from risks. What happens if the assumption is not concerned? What percentage of resources in your project you are dedicating or allocating for risk planning, monitoring, and response? And by resources, not only financial resources, your time to manage those risks. Who is involved if you risk manage it? It's not supposed to be just the project manager. How often those risks are reassessed and updated? And then coming, looking at the board, what are the key risks that need the board attention and support? Which one should the board be concerned about? And which one should they be monitoring as well? So to get involved is to get close to the project. They don't have to go activity by activity, but that communication piece with the project manager and the project team to support the activities is really crucial for any project success.
I think those are great suggestions, Edson. And I really love the one about having a board sponsor for particular projects, because like you were saying, it's not that that board member is getting involved and rolling up their sleeves and doing the work, which is a lot of organizations get very anxious about that because there are some board members who sort of overstep their bounds a little bit and get involved in the nitty gritty. But having a sponsor and having a very clear scope for what that means for sponsorship, I think is so great. It's a nice balance between making sure your board is still involved and aware of the work the organization's doing, and also lifting, like you were saying, risk concerns to that level and engaging the board so that they can prioritize those risks. Really great suggestions there, Edson. Thank you for that. So you also mentioned project assumptions, Edson, and the difference between project assumptions and risk. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, of course. So when we develop a log brand, which is to most users to design projects and all that, we always have like a column to assumptions. And it's misunderstood or sometimes confused with risks. So assumption is something that's out of the project management and the team control. We rely on external factors that to our project can become successful. For example, if you have funding coming from overseas, you might have an exchange rate fluctuation. And that is absolutely out of control. We cannot affect or change the exchange rate. So an assumption is that that exchange rate would be in a certain level that we will guarantee that the funds that I receive will be enough for my project, will be enough for me to implement my activities. It is a little bit different from risk. The risk, you can at least reduce the probability or the impact of that risk. You can work and create response plans for that. And that difference is important when you're discussing with funding organizations. So you have to tell the funding, your donors, these are the project risks. And we have designed response plan for those risks. And this is the resources that we need for those response plans. So you share with them that's something that you're going to be actively doing to manage the risk. While the assumption is something that you say, these are the assumptions, something that I need to happen or to maintain, or I need to not happen, so my project will be successful. If one of those constants do not maintain, if they change, I will not be able to deliver completely at the way we plan it, the outcomes of that specific project. And this is important because sometimes you're talking to the donor and the donor does not comprehend, does not understand why a project did not deliver some outcomes or even implemented some activities, but that was completely out of the control of the project manager and the project team.
It's so interesting, Edson, that you were talking about assumptions because I'm fairly old and I'm used to using original logical frameworks. And you were mentioning how assumptions is one of the columns. What I have found now, though, is that the log frames that I see floating around organizations, they've completely gotten rid of that column. It's not even there anymore. And sometimes when I say, well, wait a minute, what happened to that column? People look at me and go, what do you mean? What happened to that column? So I don't even know if that's being taught around log frames anymore, the concept of assumptions. But yeah, absolutely. The assumptions are there for a reason. It's a really good thing to sit and think about. And it is related to risk, but it's not exactly risk. And also with assumptions too, like you were saying, it's things that need to happen or we need to avoid in order to ensure that we're achieving the objectives and the impact of the project. Now, those assumptions can be negative. They could be bad things that will avoid happening. But a lot of people forget about the positive assumptions. And it's the same thing with positive risks, right? There are positive risks, which are called opportunities. So can you talk a little bit about how that links in with project management, how opportunities and positive risks work when we're talking about managing projects in the third sector?
Well, that's a really nice topic. And I think we could have a whole conversation around positive and negative risks. I remember several years ago, I was talking to a colleague and he told me, hey, there is no such thing like positive risks. And I said, well, it kept me thinking about his expression. And then I came back and talked to him about that. And then his point of view was, well, positive risk is an opportunity for the project. It's something that you might do better, or you might have more resources. For example, you plan to use funds to rent a place for a community meeting, and somehow you get that offered for free. Oh, we just talked about the exchange rate. But the exchange rate could affect positively. Instead of not having enough money to implement my activities, I might have too much. Maybe the exchange rate will be positive for the project. We receive more money than we're expecting. However, his point of view was, even though that creates an opportunity for the project, for the project management itself, it is a disruption. You will need to deal with a change in your project. There is a disruption there, positive, but you have to dedicate time to redesign activities, redesign plans. You need to see how that positive aspect will affect other activities, other areas of management. And in the end, when we call positive risk, we have to remember that we need to have time and resources waiting to deal with that change. Not just say, okay, though, this is opportunity. This is a positive risk. I don't have to look at it. If it happens, good, but that's not correct. I mean, let's go back to the exchange rate example. I fixed that. I had a project that I was living in Brazil, and I was managing a project there, and I had a project that received funds in US dollars. And suddenly, we had like a change on the currency exchange. We get too much money. On our first quarterly report, we sent to the donor, and the donor called me, say, what's happening? Why are the activities not happening? Said, well, they're happening. Well, but there is a lot of funds left in the balance. Why didn't you use that funds? And I had to explain that it was because of exchange rate fluctuation. Some donors even do not send you the next parcel of your funding if there is too much funds left in your banking account. So we had to manage that risk. See, it's a positive risk. It's having more money than you needed initially or you planned, but there is a disruption that you have to discuss with and don't have to manage that. But that was a very nice insight. I never thought about that before talking to this colleague. And now I have a different look at positive risks. Risk is a risk. The impact of that risk might be positive or negative.
That's such a great example, Edson. The definition that I always use is the ISO 31000 definition. Risk is the effect of uncertainty on objectives. If you just look at that definition alone, it's neither positive nor negative. It's neutral. It's the effect of uncertainty on objectives. And that can be positive, an opportunity, or negative, a threat. But I really like what you're saying is from the project manager's point of view, whether it's positive or negative, it is still going to disrupt, and it could be a positive disruption like you were describing, but it's still going to disrupt the plan that has been made. And from a project manager's point of view, either way, they're going to have to adjust. But I think that's like many things they say, plans are great on paper. And then once you start executing against that plan, we know things are going to change. And so having that flexibility and being able to pivot is probably a key skill set that project managers need to have. So If people are listening today and they are interested in learning more about project management, a lot like risk, which is dynamic and things are changing all the time, project management has changed over the years as well. So what are some places that people can go to read more? Obviously, please talk a lot about the website and the materials that you have there, but are there any other training programs or podcasts or blogs that people can read, hopefully free or low to no resource intensive, to learn more about project management and specifically project management in the third sector?
Oh, absolutely. But before sharing what PM for Angels has to offer on ideas, one thing that I would say for project managers that the best way to learn about project management is just shut up and listen. There is an Italian author that wrote several books about listening to the community. And the best project managers are in the community. They know how to make things happen. So go to the community. Do not forget about your role. You're not there to do implement tasks, but shut up and listen to them. They will bring to you the most important, the best insights in terms of managing the project, success of the project, what are the risks, how to monitor, and what is happening there. So this is one thing that any project manager should do. But looking at formal training, you know, looking at the formal learning, PM for Angels guide, like I said, are available for free. So anyone can download the guide and use that. So please do it. Adapt it. Cut it out. Print it or don't print it because you don't want to damage the environment, but print only the parts that you would need to and use it. Each one of the guides, Project Pro, Program Pro, Finance Pro, and Reader Pro, has specific tools for risk management as well. At least they consider this topic as part of the key tools and techniques for manage a project. Of course, depending on the complexity of your project, you might need additional learning even outside the PM for Angels best practice. Of course, I would say if you're looking for training courses, you have a group of training partners, official training partners that offer courses online and face-to-face. And I'm suggesting the course because when you take a training course, you're not just learning from the guide or from the reading or from the content. We're learning from each other. So we have the chance to get in contact with other learners, other professionals that have different experiences in different countries and different contexts. And this is important for any project manager to understand what could happen in a project in similar in mother country or in different contexts. PM for Angels also have a community platform that is absolutely free for anyone who is DPRO certified. It's called DPRO Plus. So if you go to PM for Angels website, you will see the link to access there, the DPRO Plus. And if you are certified in any of our certifications, you have access to this community. There are over 1,000 professionals around the world that can connect their knowledge, share experiences. And also you can request specific mentoring process for more experienced project managers. And it's a good place to try to learn for other project managers to contact them. And besides that, I mean, don't look at your project or your learning as a silo. Look around, look at what's happening with other projects. And in your organization, you can learn a lot from other projects that are happening, even if the area is different from your area, but it is a project as well.
That's wonderful. And I'll make sure that we include the link to the website in the show notes so that people can find it a lot more easily. Edson, if people are interested in reaching out to you and getting in touch because they're interested in learning more or want to follow you, how can they get in touch with you? Where can they find you?
Well, I think the best way to contact me directly is through LinkedIn. It's LinkedIn/Edson Marino. So it's really easy to find me there. And also, if you go to our website and send a message to our team, they will forward to me if a person requests to contact me directly. And we are present in most of the social media platforms like YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. We are either present in platforms like WeChat for the Chinese professionals. So the best way is either go into the website and send a message to our team. They're going to be forwarding to me or just contact me on LinkedIn. It will be a pleasure to share, but not only to share, but also learn from other experiences that I met the people that contact.
That's wonderful. Great. So people can reach out to Edson on LinkedIn. That's fantastic. So before we close out for today, is there anything else that you want to share with the folks listening? Any final words of wisdom or recommendations that you have, tips and tricks for addressing project management in the third sector and risk?
Well, I would like to go back to the Italian author that I mentioned before. His name is Ernesto Siroli. And I think the best tip that I received and that I would like to share is shut up and listen. Siroli is the founder of an international nonprofit organization that teaches community leaders to establish and maintain enterprises to facilitate projects. What I'm saying about shut up and listen is to make sure you design and implement projects with the community, not for the community. Learn what are their real problems. We learn what are their priorities. Before even start to thinking about what kind of projects you want to implement in that specific community, just go there and listen to them. And when we talk specific about risk, they are the ones who better know all the context, everything that is happening around the project, around the community, any things that we don't even imagine that could affect your project, risks that we can't identify. They are the ones that that can teach you how to look into those risks, how to better implement your project. So in the end, like I said, do not think about project management in our sector for the community, but with them.
I think that's wonderful parting advice. And I love shut up and listen. And I think that advice could be applied to a lot of different approaches, certainly risk management. But I agree with you. Making sure that you are integrating the right people who know is so key. And a lot of times those people are, like you were saying, the community, the beneficiaries, the participants who your projects and your programs and your activities are being designed for. I often find that when I'm doing risk analysis too, and for the objective-centered risk approach that I like to teach organizations about, I like to bring the implementation team around the table because often my technical experts, my subject matter experts, have such a wealth of knowledge about the geographic location where an activity is going to be run or the thematic cultural challenges that you may have around implementing a project, that they are going to come up with the threats and opportunities so much better than just me sitting there looking at a project description. And so one of the other things I might add is make sure that you're bringing those technical experts around the table, having that conversation. And it is a broader engagement, like you're talking about when you're developing your project management plan and also your risk management plan. So wonderful, Edson. This has been such a great conversation. I really appreciate your insights. And I'm going to encourage everybody to reach out to Edson, check out the PM for NGOs website. And thank you so much for spending time with me today and being on Tolerable Risk.
Thank you, Sabina, for having me. And I am looking forward to continue to follow the Tolerable Risk podcast and congratulations for the amazing work that you are doing, bringing different experts and different topics to share their knowledge with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Edson. So that's our show for today. Please remember to like, subscribe, and follow us for all your third sector risk information. Thanks for listening to Tolerable Risk.